Chapter 6. The Claw of Deliverance went in for a strafing run along the length of the land train. The armoured beast grew before Crevan's gaze. The locomotive and four cars resembled a mechanical being with its own volition. It was gargoyle, snake, and battering ram. The crude, leering face at the front was, he suspected, a product of whatever passed for worship for the greenskins. The behemoth was constructed in tribute to their false god, and it was so powerful that it approached the monstrous divine. The Thunderhawk launched a full barrage at the locomotive. Primary cannon, twin-linked heavy bolters, las cannons and hellstrike missiles. An inferno enveloped the engine. The train didn't even slow. It drove through the explosions, and Crevan thought its face bore a mocking snarl. He could see some minor scarring on the roof plating of the cars, but the locomotive showed no damage at all. At the very least, the clear blister beneath the great turret should have been shattered, its occupant reduced to ash. Instead, the engineer appeared to wave, as if amused by the Raven Guard's attempts to do it harm. Then it retaliated. The big gun rose and swung towards the gunship. The movement was slow. Radost evaded it easily. The other smaller guns were a different story. The entire length of the train erupted in projectile fire. The armament was beyond excessive. It was as if the engineer had been possessed by an inspiration that had turned into madness. Guns that blurred the line between stubber and cannon were present every few meters along both sides of the roofs of the engine and the cars. The simultaneity of the fire meant that the engineer was controlling all of them. Shutters opened up in the flanks, and the orc troops aboard started shooting too. Radost took the Thunderhawk into a steep climb. The wall of ordnance slammed against its armor. A few of the rounds penetrated, though the damage was minimal. The main cannon fired. The shot went wide, but the size of the shell hit home for Crevan. That was an artillery piece. The shell arced into the sky. Its descent was hidden. The orcs, he realized, could start bombarding reclamation whenever the spirit moved them. The orcs wanted the city as badly as the Eldar did. They both had to be denied.
"Shadow Captain," Zorbak voxed, "we are in position to attempt to board."
"Where are you?"
"Approaching the rear car."
Radost brought the gunship around. He began dropping towards the train once more. The squads had all been kept at bay by the massive firepower, but Crevan saw Zobek's squad arrowing down towards their target.
"We'll draw the fire,"
Crevan said. Radost nodded that he'd understood. He raced the assault squad. The Thunderhawk screamed across the locomotive's front at maximum velocity. The orc guns sought it out again. The range of the train's field of fire was impressive. The engineer could shoot at whatever it saw. The Claw of Deliverance passed close enough for Crevan to see the massive grin on the orc's face. The guns tracked, the beat of their fire a chud, 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 chud that shook the land. More rounds struck the gunship. He heard the crash and shatter of damage. He saw Radost struggle with controls becoming sluggish. The gunship's weapons struck at the train again, and again the orc machine shrugged them off. The claw shot up and away from the train. Crevan looked down to see if they had held the orc's attention long enough to give Zorbak the chance he needed. They had not. He saw the final moments of another slaughter. The train's guns were not slaved to each other. They were capable of firing at independent targets. While the locomotive's armaments had hit the Thunderhawk, the ones on the cars had responded to Zorbak's attempted incursion. The blizzard of fire killed his squad. Of the 10 warriors, only one managed to land on the roof.
Take us to the rear,
Krivan told Radost. The pilot kept the gunship high until he was level with the last car and began the descent. Krivan called the sergeant's name over the vox. Zobak answered with a croak. It was he who stood on the roof. As the gunship drew nearer, Krivan increased the magnification of his helmet lenses. He looked at his sergeant. Zobak was stooped, his armor ruined in a dozen places. He took one heavy step. A hatch opened in the center of the roof, and an orc climbed out. It rushed at the space marine, brandishing a cleaver the size of its arm. Zobak did not move. The orc stepped up to him and swung the cleaver back with both hands. Zobak shot out his arm, ramming his lightning claws into the orc's brain. The orc sagged on the spikes. Its weight dragged Zobak's arm down. He almost dropped to his knees. He pulled his arm away, freeing it of the orc. He stumbled back, but remained upright. He walked forward another step. Two more orcs had emerged from the hatch. They carried huge shotguns. They shot him as they walked towards him. The rounds must have been solid slugs. The impacts were massive. Zobak jerked with each hit. The orcs fired, reloaded, fired again. Krivan watched the blows batter the sergeant to death. The vision through his lenses grew in detail and pain as the Thunderhawk plunged towards the roof of the train in a desperate dive. A useless dive, Krivan thought. Did he imagine there was any aid they could bring to Zobak? What did he think would happen when the Claw of Deliverance came close to the land train once more? He killed the magnification.
Pull up, he told Radost.
The pilot must have been expecting the order. He responded as if he'd been about to make the course correction himself at that moment. Below, the diminished figure of Zobak fell from the train. He was crushed beneath the treads of the cars. Radost asked,
We do have to board it, don't we?
Krivan nodded.
Our weapons aren't enough to get through that force field.
How can it be so powerful?
For the same reason that all these greenskins are exaggerated exemplars of their kind. There is something on this planet, brother, that is driving them to obscene accomplishments.
The Eldar know what it is, he thought. There would be no use in asking Alathanas the nature of the secret. It was something important to the Eldar. It would have to be discovered by other means. The Thunderhawk was moving west, tracking the train's progress. Krivan looked to the north. From this height, it seemed that the Eldar had lured the orcs into cracks in the land. Both armies had vanished. It occurred to Krivan that this invisibility might give the Saimhan dangerous opportunities. He contacted Behrazi.
Brother Sergeant, he said, I have a task for you that I don't think you will welcome.
I welcome my duty in whatever form it takes, Shadow Captain,
Behrazi answered.
You have fought well from the shadows and justified my faith in you. I need you to act as observer for the moment.
Meaning?
Track the progress of the Eldar campaign.
Are we providing assistance?
No. Surveillance only. Keep me informed of its success or failure. More particularly, watch for any behavior that is not about killing greenskins.
We are tasked with watching our Eldar allies, Behrazi said to Ram.
That's all?
For now.
He looked towards the lowlands of the gullies. The ground to the west leveled off, becoming drier and cracked by jagged cleavages. There must once have been aggressive streams carving out such deep beds. They were long gone, leaving behind a maze of rock. There was no way of monitoring the entire network of crevasses, though that wouldn't be necessary. The struggle itself would be a guide. He addressed the full squad.
"We'll have to spread out," he said. "Cover as much ground as you can. If the Eldar are any sort of tacticians, they'll be leading the greenskins into multiple gullies. Stay with the larger struggles. Relay what you see."
They moved out onto the broken terrain. The gullies were a sudden drop in the dry plain, extending east and north. They were narrow and very deep, easily 20 or 30 meters and more. Vehrazi thought their depth and the complexity of the network was a bit too remarkable to be entirely natural. From the position of the squad as it moved from the southwest corner of the system, the interconnections resembled the radiating pattern of a spider's web. It was too artistic. In this, it was in keeping with what he had seen of the planet's geology. It was too precise, too pleasing to the eye. The quick shifts from one region to another felt like an arrangement rather than the lucky chance of natural processes. He wondered again about the Eldar interest in the world. Perhaps Krevan's suspicions were justified, and yet he felt uneasy in his task as he took up a position at the edge of a gully that pointed straight as a clawed finger. Partway down, he saw a large skirmish. The Eldar were fighting hard. They had fought honorably, and their actions, as far as he had seen, had been the same. They were keeping faith with the agreement. "We are the ones who are not," he thought. He lowered himself amid the rocks at the top of the cleft. He found shadow and made himself part of it. He stood with perfect stillness. He waited and watched and wished he was boarding the train. He would have preferred the honest directness of that action. What bothered him was not quite that the Raven Guard might be betraying a Xenos race. This was not about being more accepting of species whose existence was an affront to the sight of the Emperor. It was about being true to what the Raven Guard should be. They fought from the shadows. They became shadows. That did not mean becoming infected by shadow. "We are not the Night Lords." He hoped that when he was next called upon to act, he would be confident that he did so with honor. Alathanas was alone again. He had been in a squadron of 4 other jet bikes, but had split off from them at a wide junction of gullies. He had sensed an opportunity down the left-hand one. It was extremely narrow. It looked like a cleft made in the bedrock by a giant axe blade. Its course was a series of switchbacks. He was mad to take it at this speed. He hoped the orcs were proud enough and foolish enough to follow him. They were. 4 bikes followed him. The excited hoots of their riders echoed up the rock walls. "So," Alathanas thought, "we find common ground in madness." He flew even faster. He skimmed over the broken bottom of the gully. He was surprised the orcs were able to maintain control of their vehicles over such a surface. The air rushed hard against his skin. A cliff face loomed ahead of him. He waited until the last second to throw his jet bike into a hard left turn. The wall came at him so quickly and was so close, the wind itself seemed to turn into stone. The jet bike screamed. Momentum wanted him to wreck himself against the stone. Instead, he shot away and rounded the next corner. He looked back as he took the turn. The leader orc drove straight into the cliff without even trying to turn. The bike exploded. Flames washed back over the other 2. They managed to stay upright even as they had to make a 90-degree course correction. Alathanas left them behind for the few moments it took them to reach the turn. They came around it, firing. The bullets shrieked past him. He pulled ahead, the jet bike flying over the land with grace while the orc vehicles gouged the earth. They pursued him with power and brute aggression. That would be enough to keep them in the race, but no more. If he wanted, he could lose the orc bikes. He wanted them to follow. He wanted the orcs certain that his fall was imminent. There was still 100 meters before the next sharp turn. He risked a glance back. The orcs were falling too far behind. He slowed down a fraction, just enough to give them the illusion of closing. Then he was at the turn. The orcs wouldn't fall for the same gambit again. Even they would slow down enough to negotiate the turn. That gained him another couple of seconds. He looked ahead, saw that the next switchback was barely 30 meters distant. He accelerated, flew hard right at full speed. Now there was another long, narrow stretch before the cleft in the rock closed entirely 50 meters on. He was in a dead end. He saw all this and the moves open to him in a fraction of a second. For all his time as a ranger, for all the distance that existed between him and the greater community of his fellows at this moment, he was one with them. He was living at the speed of the Saim Han. The world was a blur, the past non-existent, the future compressed into a present of lightning decisions and consequences. Battle was the wind against him, the wind created by his own velocity. The experience was more profound than exhilaration. It was the expression of the deep truth of his being. It was a summation. The orcs thought they could use speed against the Saim Han. He would prove them wrong. He turned the jet bike around and rose a few meters higher above the ground. He flew back the way he had come. He lowered the aim of his shuriken catapults. The orcs came around the corner at the same time that he did. He fired down, strafing the riders as they passed beneath him. The shuriken severed the right arm of the lead pilot. His bike jerked left and started flipping. The others couldn't avoid it. They drove into a collision. Alathanas's lip curled. The orcs were becoming very good at killing each other through their own love of speed. Alathanas left the orcs behind. He returned to the junction and made his way through the maze of connections towards the sound of war. He shot through a passage so narrow that the walls brushed the wings of the jet bike. He came out in one of the larger gullies. It was wide and long. The orcs used the greater room to their advantage. They filled the space with their strength. Infantry and bikes were here in numbers. There was also a battle wagon. It struggled to find traction in the soft earth of the former riverbed. It advanced in irregular lurches. That was dangerous enough. The combined orc forces filled the gully with a torrent of fire. It worked. No amount of speed or maneuverability could escape that storm. As he entered the gully behind the orcs, Alathanas saw an entire squadron of jet bikes smashed and blown apart by bullet and shell. 3 jet bikes still flew, jinking hard, flying straight at the orcs in a desperate attempt to punch a hole in their fire. The excited laughter of the orcs rose over the hammering roar of their attack. Alathanas flew down the center of the gully. He passed over the orcs' heads, once more firing down on them, drawing part of their attention away from the other attackers. Some of the orcs assumed he was not alone and retaliated against phantom enemies to the rear. The confusion was the edge the attacking Eldar needed. They lost another jet bike, but they also cut a swath deep into the orc infantry and took out 2 riders. The tank advanced unharmed. Alathanas joined the other 2. One was a fire dragon named Kuthalen. The other was the Ortok. Eleira reversed direction and led them away from the enemy. The remaining bikes ran over their own foot soldiers in their eagerness to give chase. One collided with a walker, destroying both. The rest of the orcs advanced at the pace of their tank. The gully had a gradual curve to the right. The jet bikes moved beyond the line of sight of all but the bikes. Eleira turned around again. "Stay a few lengths behind me," she ordered. As Alathanas had done earlier, she sped back to meet the bikes. Instead of flying above the orcs' heads, she stayed at ground level. The bikers, four of them, found themselves on a collision course with her, shuriken volleys cutting into their vehicles and their flesh at eye level. The bikes veered off to either side. While the orcs fought to regain control, they were easy prey for Alathanas and Cuthalen. They had gained a breathing space for the few minutes it would take the other orcs to arrive. Ahead, another channel joined from the right. The sound of more combat came from the far side of the rock face. Alathanas heard what he was sure was the growl of another large engine. He pointed to the junction and said, "We could well have tanks on either side of us very soon." "If we can foresee that result," said Eleira, "be assured that Pasavan does and is doing what he must. The timing will need to be precise." She took them towards the junction.
"For what, Ortok?"
"Bringing the tanks together." Alathanas pictured two battle wagons following them into the channel before them. It was still wide enough for the heavy vehicles to enter, but their movements would be even more restricted. Despite the increase in firepower, two tanks would be a liability, one that, with the right lure, the orcs would be unable to resist. "We want the tanks following us here," Eleira said. "The Farseer has determined that this path will give us what we need to destroy them." She did not add, "before they destroy us." Alathanas understood the implication all the same. "How many of us have fallen?"
"Too many."
Deep rumbling came from behind, approaching from two angles. Alathanas looked back. He saw Pasavan's bike and the Viper racing their way, firing shuriken and exterminating energy into the pursuing army. The timing would be as Eleira had ordered. As the other two Eldar skimmers arrived and all five headed down the channel, there was a moment when the combined fire of the two orc forces reached for them. The sinuous turns of the gully gave the Eldar cover after the first few seconds, but by then the damage had already been done to Cuthalen. Her jet bike's starboard wing was reduced to a ragged stub. Its flight was uneven. She leaned forward, her back arched with pain. Alathanas flew beside her. Her helmet turned to face him. She nodded, then dropped back. She was giving the uninjured a clear path and preparing to give the orcs a bitter triumph when she could no longer fight. The gully's curves came quickly. Around each, Alathanas hoped to see the salvation that Eleira and Pasavan expected to find. It remained invisible. To the rear, the orc bikes kept pace, racing ahead of the battle wagons. Their fire was continuous. They appeared to have unlimited supplies of ammunition. "Now," Pasavan said as the Saimhan hit the next corner. The channel kept curving, turning north and east. Part way in, Alathanas saw the trap they needed. Ahead, a rocky arch spanned the gully. The Viper passed under it. Its gunner turned the lance's beam on the ends of the arch, alternating shots, working symmetrical weakness into the stone. "Slow them down," Eleira ordered, heading back towards the orcs. "Bunch them up." Cuthalen shot ahead of her.
"Let the first blow be mine, Ortok," she said.
Her jet bike's flight was even more erratic. The strain in her voice was mortal. Will alone was keeping her alive and aloft.
"Granted," said Eleira, "with our thanks. Safe journey, Fire Dragon."
Cuthalen dropped low, her hull almost kissing the riverbed. She held her fire. Over the din of their own engines and guns, the orcs had no warning of her coming.
They met in the curve, less than a dozen meters separating them. Their relative velocity was blinding. The orcs appeared, and Cuthalen ploughed into them. She fired at the last second and decapitated the leading orc. Cuthalen turned her skimmer as she hit. She crashed into two of the enemy at once, even as her shuriken sliced through engines and fuel lines. Tangling metal and wraithbone erupted in flame. Alathanas was startled by the size of the explosion. Cuthalen's vehicle appeared to be the source of the blast, and it blew up too easily, with too much force. At least its death hurt the orcs. The remaining Eldar skimmers steered around the burning crash, Eleira and Passavan on the left, Alathanas on the right. They strafed the flanks of the orcs. The enemy's charge stumbled. The orcs turned their bikes towards the attackers, and now they were colliding with each other, driving at cross purposes, firing across the gully. Within seconds, six bikes were caught in the confusion. The hammering roar of the battle wagons drew closer. The delaying tactic had served its purpose. Alathanas raised his bike over the heads of the orc riders and followed the other two Eldar back around the curve. A cannon shell hit the cliff wall on his left. He was buffeted by the blast. A wind of stone shards hit him and his jet bike, shredding his cloak as he drove on. Behind him came the sound of crumpling metal as the tanks drove over the wreckage. Bullets and shells shrieked past him as the orcs moved forward again. The arch was just meters ahead. Eleira and Passavan went underneath. They kept on going, drawing the orcs' attention beyond the natural bridge. Alathanas reached it. Just as he did, another shot from one of the big guns hit the stone. He winced, expecting the rock to fall on his head and disarm the trap. But the arch held. He was past it now. He kept moving forward, maintaining the lure, but slowed down just enough to look back. The two battle wagons arrived. The bright lance struck the arch one more time. From a distance, there was something almost gentle about the touch of light against stone. The effect was massive. The bridge collapsed. Thousands of tons of rock fell on the orc tanks. The thunder of avalanche mixed with the grind of crushed metal. The ground shook with a compressed blast of ordnance exploding. Dust rolled in both directions down the gully. Alathanas turned around again and headed into the cloud. As the echoes of the rockfall faded, he saw the stony heap that marked the grave of the tanks. From the other side came the frustrated howls of orcs. Their heavy armor was destroyed, and their way forward was blocked. Alathanas prepared to take his jet bike over the rubble and into the orc mass. The dust was an opportunity. It was perfectly suited to the path that had long been his. He would strike the orcs as a phantom from the white limbo. But before he could descend, Eleira and Passavan had joined him. "No, Ranger," Eleira said. "Your battle here is finished." "Ortok?" He could not keep the disbelief from his voice. His battle here was just beginning, he thought. The field of struggle had transformed. It had become his domain. "We have hurt the orcs," Eleira told him. "But we are a long way from defeating them."
"Our losses elsewhere in this network are severe," Passavan added.
"Our victory is uncertain." Eleira paused, letting her words sink in. "A loss against the orcs here is far more serious than our deaths."
"The mission," Alathanas said.
"We might fail here. There is the possibility that the humans will fail against the land train."
Alathanas looked at Passavan.
The Farseer was difficult to make out in the billowing dust. His silhouette nodded.
The skein is tangled, he said. I can discern the paths we must follow, but the outcome of any of them is very uncertain. Our best course is not much better than a hope. What would you have me do?
Alathanas asked Eleira.
Return to the city. Your skills are suited to more than combat. Find what we seek. If we fall here, you might yet have a chance of preventing the greater evil.
Even if I find it, what can I do alone?
You won't be alone. We will spare who we can to join you. If you succeed that far, then nothing else matters. We will abandon the struggle here and do what must be done.
I see.
He did. He didn't have to walk the path of the seer to know what the consequences would be. No matter what happened, none of the Saim Han on this planet would live to the next dawn. Their doom was a certainty. His heart felt heavy with the weight of his race's tragedy. The fall continued to echo in every death, in every lost cause. Perhaps this cause was not yet lost. The success of the mission would be worth his own death. He used the cover of the dust to rise out of the gully. Behrazi heard the huge rumble to the northeast of his position. A few moments later, the dust cloud billowed into the air above the gullies.
That could have been the work of either side, Ram said. True.
He watched the cloud. After a minute, an Eldar bike emerged from the dust. It headed west, back to reclamation.
They can't have won already, Gera said.
Behrazi tracked the flight of the lone warrior. Just as the Xenos was disappearing into the distance, three more jet bikes appeared and flew off in the same direction.
They haven't won, he said. That's why we are seeing this. Only a few warriors being sent. This is an act of desperation. They think they might lose. What do they hope to accomplish? Gera wondered. That is our mission to discover.
He waited until the Eldar were out of sight and he was certain no others would be leaving the fight with the orcs. He contacted Krivan over the Vox.
Some of the Eldar are heading for reclamation, he reported.
The Shadow Captain grunted.
Follow them, he ordered. We are on the point of doing so. Good. See what they do. Keep me informed as best you can, Krivan said, and broke the connection.
The captain, Behrazi thought, had not sounded surprised at the news. If anything, there had been the satisfaction of having been proven correct in his tone. Behrazi, for his part, felt something closer to disappointment, perhaps even sadness. He would not go as far as to say that he had trusted the Eldar, but he had wanted to believe in their honour. He had thought he had seen something of that order in Alathanas when the two forces had parleyed in the city. As his jump pack took him on the first leap towards reclamation, the disappointment turned into resentment. He did not like being fooled. By the time he and his squad were halfway to the city, he was furious. He was ready to exact lethal punishment for the Xenos' treachery.